Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we will go to LA to speak with Will Updike of Locked On Clippers about Paul George's return and Kawhi Leonard's load management. We'll go to Boston to speak with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics about Gordon Hayward's broken hand. And lastly, we go to Toronto to speak with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors about the dual injuries to Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka and how Toronto can cope with that. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On NBA for another week. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast and the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com and Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at @RedRock_Beeble. Big stuff to talk about, big injuries across the NBA for some top teams in the East and an injury return across in the Western Conference. And we're going to talk about that in today's show. So let's get to it. Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Clippers podcast. William Updike is here with me. It's been a pretty good start to the season for the Clippers, William, and it's about to get a bit better, I think, because Paul George's return appears imminent. What's the latest on the return of PG?
So it sounds like they're eyeing a return either for that game against the Rockets or the Pels, which is a back-to-back. So I would like to see him in that Rockets game. It'd be nice. If you want to ease him in, I guess I do totally understand, though, going ahead and maybe having Kawhi play the first night of that back-to-back, resting him, and then having George's big debut in New Orleans.
So I think we're expecting mid to late November for a return. So he seems a little bit ahead of schedule here in terms of a return. How do you think they'll look to ease him in? Will it be like he comes in and plays 25 minutes, or will he be banged straight in 32 minutes a night and go straight from there? Like, what's the idea of easing him in? Is it we've waited this long so he can come in, really hit the ground running, or is it going to be a bit of an easing period?
You know, I think that from George's perspective, he's going to want to hit the ground running. It's really going to depend on how cautious the training staff wants to be. Really, internally, this is pretty close. His returnal is it's close to the timeline that we've heard from the front office since the injury. They thought around 10 games, probably somewhere mid-November. So I think they've been eyeing him pretty much ready to go. So far in seeing him shoot and stuff, it doesn't appear that the shoulder is really hindering him that much. It's kind of an injury that I personally am a little less worried about. So I am fine with him going at, pretty close to, let's say, 80% capacity when he starts. But, that'll be dependent on what he looks like, when we actually finally get to see him in a 5-on-5 game.
So we've heard with the Clippers, with Kawhi and with Paul George, how they're so anti being called a power forward and they both want to be small forwards. And that has led some to worry that maybe that the Clippers will actually go with a lineup with those two out there with Patrick Patterson as well and push Landry Shamet to the bench. Patterson, the surprise starter to begin the season, has really tailed off. He, to me, seems the obvious candidate to be eliminated from the rotation. But is that the sense you're actually getting here? Or is this stubbornness from both George and Leonard maybe going to keep him in the rotation and have a suboptimal guy out there in place of someone else who might be doing a better job?
Yeah, I don't think Patterson is going to have to be playing a lot worse, I think, to really jeopardize this spot. He was a standout in the preseason, as you said. That has definitely tailed off. That being said, he just has the size and the durability of the guy that you want handling the more explosive and the more talented fours on the other side of the floor. Especially as you work Paul George back in, I think it's fair to assume that on nights where Kawhi is playing, he's probably not going to be at his highest defensive level. So I think that that's where maybe you have a more traditional person to kind of guard the four. And then if one is resting, as you said, keep Shamet in. or I believe the intention is going to be to have Shamet pretty much running off the bench. That lineup worked really well last year against Golden State in the playoffs, and I don't see Doc really wanting to tinker with that too much.
Couldn't Jermichael Green fill that Patrick Patterson role? Because someone's going to have to miss out of this rotation once Paul George returns. Someone is going to, unless they're going to run 11 deep. Like, someone's going to have to be the guy that misses out. Is it going to be Green? Is it going to be Harkless? Like, Patterson to me is the obvious option there. But if he is starting, that means he's obviously not out of the rotation. So who's the guy that it's going to be unlucky in that group? Or will they run 11 deep?
I think it's possible that we see 11 deep, but yeah, Patterson will definitely see the biggest cut to his playing time. I'm surprised that we haven't seen Jermichael in that starting four position. Doc has spoke really highly. He likes the tandem pairing of Mo and Jermichael, so that could be a reason why he's just, he's spending a little bit more time with that second unit. I think that Jermichael Green, to me, is the best fit from an offensive perspective. And then you also get to I think that works better for Zoo, too, from a spacing perspective. Like, Patterson has not shot the ball real reliably, and you definitely are going to be getting that with Jermichael.
Let's move on to the other superstar on this team. Of course, so much national discourse about load management. I don't want to talk about the nonsense that surrounds it, about how unfair it is and how he's stealing and how he's holding franchises hostage, because we know that there's a reason for this. It's a well thought out reason. It makes sense for his behalf, for the Clippers' behalf, for literally everybody's behalf. And we're not here to argue about your foolish talking points. But what I wanted to talk to you about is the frustration that goes with the national discourse. I don't think that the Clippers are going to be feeling any pressure to start play Kawhi because people are saying that he's weak. But is that frustration building around the organization about hearing this? They obviously copped that fine for a weird reason of not providing the information that was NBA approved or whatever however they want to describe it. But is that frustration, is there any visibility to the frustration about the discourse around Kawhi and his games played?
I think in the fan base there is some. That's just not something the organization as a whole seems to care about at all.
Okay, that's good.
$50,000 fine is nothing, and the reason for that I do think is a little interesting. It's just Doc made some comments in the pregame about him being healthy, quote unquote. So I don't know. It's one of those things, like, the NBA even ruled to their protocol. He was an unhealthy player. It was, it was a verified rest. So I don't think it affects the organization or the coach. Or honestly, I don't think it really affects the players all that much either, other than they probably get sick of hearing questions about it. But I think the fan base, it does. It definitely makes people get a little bit more defensive about the whole situation. But it's nothing new, like this, and not even just with Kawhi, we build team. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'll say, look, we had on the weekend, Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, Kristaps Porzingis all rested on a back-to-back.
Yeah.
No, not one person claimed that they were stealing money or it was a disgrace and that they wouldn't survive back in the day. Not one person said anything about any of those situations. Yet a bloke who's got two degenerative issues in both legs, compensatory type issues in tendons that could blow up at any point and they're trying to manage it, he's all of a sudden the worst thing in the world. And I'm not a Clippers fan, but it makes me get defensive hearing all this stuff. So I could imagine there'd be some level of frustration amongst Clippers people in the organization. But I'm glad that they're trying to at least keep that noise out or disregard it and doing literally what is best for themselves, the franchise, the team, the player, and all those things. Because in the end, that is the thing that matters the most for them in terms of keeping things. Because these are people, obviously, keeping Kawhi, not keeping him happy, but doing something so his leg doesn't blow up, and nobody wants that to happen, because when it happens, like, then we saw it last year with Kevin Durant, even though the Warriors weren't to blame, but everyone was quick to blame them. Well, why is he playing? No wonder it's his fault, it's their fault that his Achilles blew up. And so people will just switch that narrative real quickly back to the other direction. So it's been a frustrating debate to try and follow. I'm sure you guys would love for it to go away, but it unfortunately isn't. But hey, let's focus on the good things, Will. You have got a super strong team that's about to welcome back a player who was I think he finished third in the MVP last season. So good times are ahead for the Clippers. You'll have all of that information on Paul George's debut and the rest of the season over on Locked On Clippers. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Josh.
Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, John Corrales, is here with me. The Celtics off to a flying start after that opening night loss to the Sixers, undefeated since then, seven in a row. But the last victory against the Spurs was soured a little bit, John. Gordon Hayward suffering a fractured hand. We don't know whether he requires surgery at this point. But what before we talk about how Hayward has actually looked, what are we looking at in terms of recovery, best and worst case scenario?
So the worst case scenario, probably, you're looking at up to 6 to 8 weeks if things don't go as they expect, if it's a fracture that's maybe displaced or something like that. The injuries in the fourth metacarpal on his left hand, which is the bone down below the ring finger in the palm of your hand. So the good news is it's the non-shooting hand. But you still can't play with a broken hand. So best case scenario, they, as Brad Stevens put it, surgery to lessen the recovery time. And Aaron Baines suffered the same injury last season and was back in 4 weeks. So that would probably be, I think, the best case scenario for Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, whenever I see a fractured hand injury, my mind immediately goes to a 4-week recovery. We've seen it in the past. Rondo's had this issue, Baines last year, Anthony Davis has had it in the past, and it always seems to be around 4 weeks, unless, of course, you're Steph Curry, and it keeps you out for 6 months, apparently. But Hayward is looking at 4 weeks. But before this, he was looking great. Would you say that he was back to his best? Or I've heard people even say that he was back to being better than he was back in those Utah days, because he was fantastic, especially in those last couple leading up to the injury.
Yeah, I think he was different than the Utah. Yep. But like, he was back to that level of play for sure, but playing differently than he was back then, because now he's got different teammates that he can pass to, a different point guard that can set him up. And he was really, over the first few weeks here, has been playing out of his mind, passing well, cutting, shooting. I mean, everything was going pretty well for him. So it's kind of a shame that it happened right now, because he was on his way to another 20-point game. He'd hit 4 of 9 shots in 15 minutes against the Spurs, and was probably on his way to another 20-point game, and would have been one of 3 Celtics to be averaging over 20 points to that point. So it's a shame, but at the same time, at least it's his non-shooting hand. At least he can stay in shape and keep his conditioning up. And the Celtics, while shorthanded, can, I think, kind of absorb this for over the next 4 weeks or so.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is what happens here to step up? In the second half of that game against the Spurs, Marcus Smart moved into the starting lineup. Do you think that's the direction they'll go, pushing Jason Tatum up a position? They also have Grant Williams, who they've relied upon more than some may have expected as a rookie. Other guys who could step into that position, or do you think it will be Smart that moves in there? They played a little bit of Javonte Green in the second half, also with Hayward out, mm-hmm. to play some power forward minutes, or will it be more of a rotating cast? Brad Stevens has never been shy to change starters up. He could use Daniel Tice there a little bit more when Enes Kanter comes back as a bigger sort of lineup, as they went down the stretch with Horford Baines last season. Like, how are you seeing that void to be filled?
I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing. So far, when Jaylen Brown was out, he used Marcus Smart as the starter. And so I think he's going to kind of roll with that for now. And if that doesn't work, then I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of mixes it up. Grant Williams could certainly be a guy that starts and kind of facilitates. He's been really good at setting screens and all of that. The problem is he's been kind of over-helping defensively and making some rookie mistakes. I think what Brad Stevens is going to rely on is a more connected defensive type of lineup, which makes me think that Smart's going to be the guy. And then throughout the course of the game, maybe they even use Romeo Langford. They just recalled him. He played one game in the G League for the Maine Red Claws. Looked great in that game. So they may call on him to see if maybe he can get some second quarter minutes and kind of boost the bench scoring. One problem for the Celtics has been their bench scoring. So losing Hayward does put a bit of a strain on that. So how Brad Stevens is going to go is really kind of up in the air, especially in November, because he's the type that will experiment through Christmas and maybe even up to the All-Star break. So this just adds more kind of intrigue to what Brad Stevens might do. And it's probably going to be a situational thing. against bigger teams, he'll use different lineups, and against smaller teams, he'll use a different lineup.
They've also been using a little bit more Brad Wanamaker, who seems to have taken over some of the Carson Edwards minutes. So if Smart is moving into the lineup to play more 2-3, they do need someone to handle backup point guard duties. So we could be seeing some more Wanamaker there. Now, this Celtics team, not to harp too much on the Hayward injury, but they've been rolling. They've had 3 20-point victories in their last 7 back-to-back against the Hornets and the Spurs, both of those on the road. They come home now to take on the Mavericks on Monday. I think they're exceeding people's preseason expectations with this strong start. Do you think that the Hayward injury not reduces the start, because the start's already happened, but is it going to be harder to keep this momentum up, even though the next two opponents at home, Dallas and Washington, and then you've got the Warriors and the Kings on the road, there is a chance to keep it rolling?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly could keep it rolling. I mean, it does put some pressure on them. They were without, like I said, Jaylen Brown, and they struggled to beat New York and Cleveland.
Yep.
So, like I said, their bench is going to be tested, and they're going to need that bench to step up. It was, I think, the worst scoring bench in the league for at least a stretch there. So, the competition has kind of lined up pretty well. Like you said, Mavericks, Wizards, Warriors, Kings. That could be a stretch where they certainly could pull things together. They'll obviously, I think, run into some roadblocks with Phoenix, Clippers, and Nuggets rounding up a road trip. But the thing about the Celtics is they've kind of met or exceeded expectations at just about every position this season. So as long as they continue to play hard, play together, play this connected style of basketball, I think that they can overcome the Hayward injury, but it really leaves them very little margin for error.
Yeah, that's the thing with injuries, is often you can replace the starter with a bench player like Marcus Smart, but then who is the guy that replaces Smart? And that's when your depth really comes into question, when you have to replace the guy who's replacing the guy. As convoluted as that sounds, but it is going to be interesting. This team has exceeded these expectations, off to a hot start, and a horrible injury for a guy that everyone was really happy to see back playing at career best form. John, you'll have it all covered for us over on Locked On Celtics. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
My pleasure.
I'm joined once again by the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast. Sean Woodley is here to talk about a Toronto team whose season, at least for the short term, was dramatically altered on the weekend. 2 big injuries, Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, going to be out for multiple games. Sean, the Lowry injury at this point, I think, seems the more serious. We're looking at a minimum of 2 weeks for a fracture on his thumb. What other news have you got on the Lowry situation?
Yeah, I mean, I you say it sounds like the more serious in terms of, the on-court impact. Obviously, Lowry being out is more serious than Serge Ibaka. But honestly, I was a little bit, encouraged by the sound of it only being a couple weeks until he's reevaluated. I mean, the Raptors right now are 6-2. They've shown they're a pretty good team. I think they can weather these next couple weeks. If it's going to be 2 or 3 weeks and Lowry's back by, say, the end of December, I don't think this is like a death knell for the season. But it certainly, it sucks. Like, it's not a great... it's not a deep team. It's not a team that can withstand this kind of injury the way maybe it has in the past. If you think back to, say, 2014-15, when DeMar DeRozan missed 21 games, Kyle Lowry stepped up and they won a ton of games. Same happened a few years back when Kyle missed 21 games with a wrist injury, and they went 14-7 as DeMar and, like, Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker kind of led the show. And the Raptors have always typically had, 11 or 12 guys on hand who the coach trusts, and that's just not the case right now, especially in the backcourt. There's only Fred VanVleet, really, who's a true point guard on this team, and it's going to be a lot of, like, Terrence Davis, who's an undrafted rookie, and Pascal Siakam, who are going to be taking on some of that ball handling duty. And there's just not a layer of depth with, like, DeLon Wright's and Fred VanVleet's and, CJ Miles's and all those guys used to have sort of on the second layer of talent on this team the way they used to have. And so this is going to be a challenge with Lowry in particular, because there's just not that much in the way of depth in the backcourt.
Yeah, we spoke about the minutes last week when you were on Locked On NBA, and this is not a case of Lowry being overworked and it causes your thumb to fracture just out of nowhere. So it's nothing to do with that. But what it does put is extra stress on these guys. Like, Van Vliet's already playing 37 minutes a night at shooting guard. He's going to have to probably log a few extra minutes now. Norm Powell's going to have to come into this role. And then that backup situation, it is a real because there is no other point guard on this roster. There is Fred VanVleet, and that is it. There's a whole bunch of other guys who are going to have to play as a pseudo point guard. The Serge Ibaka injury, Nick Nurse continues to state that it was a really, really bad sprain. They've sent him home for the road trip, but that's only like another couple of games. So how, when you try to pass that information through in terms of how bad is a bad sprain and being sent home from a road trip, is this a multi-week injury? Because you can have ankle sprains and you put guys out for a month, 2 months, depending on that sort of situation. Or are we looking at it as a week type? How long should Raptors fans be expecting Serge to be out of the lineup?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I'm not a doctor, so I don't really know the specifics of what makes an ankle sprain longer to recover from or not. But, you know, based on, A, just the way Serge looked when he went down, he looked like he was in agony. He could barely put any weight on it. And for them to say it's pretty severe, I'll sort of err on the side of this is going to be closer to probably 3 or 4 weeks as opposed to like a week or two for him to come back. And that's going to put a lot of stress on Marc Gasol in particular. I mean, Gasol has been, oddly enough, the team's best on-court net rating guy this season. They always seem to just slap the opponent when he's out there, but his individual numbers have not been great. His offense has been troublesome. He almost looks scared whenever he gets the ball at this point, and that's going to have to change because Serge Ibaka, one of the things he really adds to this team is a dude who's not afraid to shoot. This is a very pass-happy, sort of egalitarian team where sometimes they just need someone to be like, okay, I'm just going to take the shot. We're done with this passing stuff, and Marc Gasol is not really inclined to play that way. So it's going to be a real challenge on him. I still think the Raptors can sort of negotiate the lack of Serge Ibaka right now, just because I think, you know, Chris Boucher has shown some flashes here and there. I think Pascal is probably going to five next to OG Anunoby and some small looks just to get weird. You know, they're going to have to get creative here, and it's never going to be the full Raptors product that you've gotten used to over the course of these first 8 games, but there's not much else in the way of choice. Gasol has to be better, and the guys behind him have to at least chip in on some level, you know, that's beyond what far this year. You know, even Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who has not played a game, you know, outside of garbage time so far this season, I think is going to have to get some minutes here just to help soak up those minutes that are now going to be spread all over the place.
For people that don't know anything about Chris Boucher, what can you tell them about him? Who's going to have to fill this role? Probably not the same exact role that Ibaka was playing, but at least absorbing these backup center minutes behind Gasol. Because it's not like they can run Gasol out there for a Fred VanVleet like 37 minutes a night. So what can we expect from Boucher? How much can he hold down the fort in those minutes?
Yeah, I'm a Chris Boucher skeptic. People in Toronto want to love him because he's Canadian, and that's cool, but he has been excellent at the G League level. He won the MVP of the G League last season with some just absurd numbers, but it's never really translated to the NBA, and he kind of seems overmatched physically against pretty much everyone he comes across. And while his sort of skill set, a shot blocker who can sort of step out and hit threes once in a while, those percentages aren't always typically very good, but that sort of style seems to, you know, paint him as a stretch five. But really, I think he's probably best as a four, which kind of creates some issues with the Raptors and sort of their spacing. And also, you know, Pascal Siakam plays the four. You don't want to have Chris Boucher soaking up those minutes if you have Siakam to play them. So I'm curious to see how Boucher will sort of step into that Ibaka role. In theory, he has sort of the similar quick trigger that Ibaka has. I think Boucher last season was like second on the team behind Kawhi in shots per 36 minutes. This was all as a human victory cigar in garbage time, just jacking up shots. But he certainly is not afraid to letting it rip. And so could help. I just don't think he's going to do it with anywhere near the efficiency that Serge Ibaka has done with. And Ibaka is also just so steady defensively. Boucher is kind of like Hassan Whiteside a little bit on defense, where he can rack up good numbers and you'll have highlight blocks. But the biggest thing with him is, you know, all those blocks tend to come at a necessity because he's at a position. So, you know, he had a really nice showing, I thought, in the second half of the game against the Pelicans when he was in that Serge role on Friday after Serge left with the injury. And he, you know, he looked within himself. He was in position. He was kind of barking out orders on defense in a way I've never really seen from him. So maybe he can build on that. But count me certainly a skeptic on the Chris Boucher experience. I think, you know, within a couple games here, people are going to be yearning for Serge Ibaka to come back.
The Raptors have only lost 2 games so far this season. The problem with those losses are they are to the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics, the two teams who are really challenging to along with the Sixers, to be at the top of the Eastern Conference. So I guess from a positive point of view, you could say the Raptors are taking care of business in the games that they should, but in the games where they're challenged, they haven't been able to come up there. So this, you know, situation that we're recording this before they take on the Lakers on Sunday. They have the Clippers on Monday. So a couple of real challenge games here without Lowry. Has the season gone sort of about as expected with those losses to those, you know, upper level teams?
Yeah, I think so. I think, honestly, it's been a little bit better than expected. The offense has been pretty good. It's actually ranked higher than the defense right now. As of yesterday, I haven't checked today, but they were 7th in offense and 10th in defense going in to the weekend. And that, honestly, that shocked me offensively. I didn't think they were going to have this kind of juice on that end, but it turns out Pascal Siakam just hits everything now, and OG Anunoby's hitting like 54% of his threes. And when that happens, your offensive number is going to uptick a little bit. And so, yeah, I think it's been as expected. I would say with these injuries, I feel like, you know, there's always an urge to make the trade deadline seem interesting. And, you know, people who sort of thrive on the transaction industrial complex, I'm sure, are going to jump on this, you know, rash of injuries for the Raptors and say, oh, no, this might derail their season. Maybe they change their plans at deadline time. I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, if they each miss between 2 and 4 weeks, that's not enough of the schedule to really derail them standings wise, because the East sucks. And even if they fall out of the top five, I would imagine once they get healthy, they'll be able to climb back in there pretty easily, especially as their schedule gets more home heavy as we go into December and January. And so this team proved through 8 games that this can be a really good team in the East. One of the two, you know, 3, 4, or 5 teams with Boston and Miami, kind of the same crew. And I think, you know, once Lowry comes back, there's going to be no sort of dip in what we saw from the first 8 games. I'm sure they'd like to get a statement win against one of these teams on the road trip, but might not be feasible with Lowry and Ibaka in the lineup.
Well, it is going to be interesting to see how the Raptors respond to these injuries. Sean, you'll have that covered for us all over on Locked On Raptors. Thanks for jumping back on Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks, man. I'll see you next week, I guess. This is just a weekly appointment we have.
Yep. Well, assuming something else is going to go wrong or go right for the Raptors, we might have you back on pretty soon. See you later, Sean.
Take it easy, man.
And that will do it for today's episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify as well, and give us a 5-star rating and review. That would be most excellent. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.